Let's pay our homage to the Lord Buddha before starting today's sermon then. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Right, so we have two questions today. Someone has asked a question: how does Rupa Vedna Sanya Sankhara and Vinyana work in the Arupa Loka? And I had received this question last week as well. I did not address the question. So basically they are asking how the mind process works in Arupa world, right? The formless worlds. Well, when I was layperson before becoming monk, then I was studying the Buddha Dhamma theoretically. I was studying how the mind process works and what are the factors in the mind and karmic process and energy and all these things. And then those times I also had this question. Then I think I did find some answers to my satisfaction when I was in lay life to this question: how does this mind process works in Arupa Loka? But unfortunately now as a monk, I don't really recall those details. And also this is not something I practice in my day-to-day life, right, in the practice. So I think I won't be able to address this question really. Because I don't like to give you approximate answers. I like to give you the best answers, most precise answers. But I don't think it would be possible with this question, because I have no idea what exactly happens in the formless worlds. So whoever has asked this question, if you don't mind, I will set this question aside. Okay, and someone has asked a question: why do we feel offended when someone scolds or insults us? So, again, interesting and age-old question. Why do we feel offended when someone scolds or insults us? So, let's discuss this question then. So, I think first thing that you should understand about this scolding, insulting, someone admonishing you, right, or blaming you, accusing you, right, whenever you are hurt by someone's speech, whenever you are hurt by these things, then there is something that you should understand, which is that something that Buddha did say about this being offended through the verbal speech or the scolding or insult, blame, accusations, admonishments, right, is that you won't be able to not get hurt until you become arhant from someone's verbal speech. This defilement, it won't go away because it's directly connected to the sense of self, right? And the sense of self will be constantly generated as long as the ignorance is not completely eradicated. So as long as the ignorance is there, right? We know if you think about the 10 bonds or fetters that we have, Sangyojana, then you know that the last one, the 10th one, is avidya. But then we have Uddhacha and then we have Mana, right? So all this Sangyojana is there. And since this defilement of feeling hurt by someone's speech is connected with your sense of self, it won't go away until you are arhant. It will reduce. So maybe let's say before you understand any Dhamma whatsoever, when someone tells you something, someone scolds you just little bit, even then you feel so hurt, right? But as you practice Dhamma, it will reduce more and more. And you will get less and less hurt by other people's speech, right? So that is what will happen. So until you become arhant, it's gonna happen. That is something that we have to understand. Now, as to why do we feel offended? So, offended basically means you're asking why do you feel hurt when someone abuses you, perhaps verbally, then why do you feel hurt? That is the question that you're asking. So, you're basically asking that why do you feel mental pain right? That is the question. So when it comes to mental pain, we know the simple answer why you have any type of mental pain or vexation, right, or suffering, let's say, is because you have a wanting. That is the simple answer. Whenever we have mental pain or suffering, the simple reason why that is happening is because what? We have some sort of wanting. So if you feel offended when someone scolds you or insults you, then obviously the very simple thing that we can realize at the very beginning when this happens is that you have some sort of wanting, right? So now the thing is, when we talk about this insults and praise, then Buddha did say these are laukika dhamma, right? Laukika dhamma. So laukika dhamma means worldly things or worldly phenomena, right? So in our human life, in human world, we have 8 type of worldly dhammas, right? The 8 things which always keeps happening in our life, right? And 2 of those 8 things is this praise and blame. Then sometimes people respect us, sometimes they disrespect us, right? Sometimes we are happy, sometimes our life is full of suffering, and sometimes we win, sometimes we lose, right? So these are 8 aspects of life which always keeps happening. So this praise and blame is also among this 8 laukika dhamma, right? So now the thing is, we obviously like to hear our praise, right? But we don't like to hear blames and insults, but we'd like to hear the praise. So the wanting is there, right? You know wanting can have 2 forms. One is you can want to have something, and another is you want to not have something, right? Or you want to not have something. So basically, want to have and want to not have, both are wanting. So if we have wanting for someone to not insult us or scold us, then obviously we are going to feel hurt, right? Now I'm giving you really simple answer, but I think in my own contemplation and in my own practice, I know that this scolding and insulting, it's not just very narrow problem or narrow defilement. It's a huge problem, and it has a many different aspects. We are ignorant about so many things, and this feeling hurt when someone scolds us is result of all this ignorance together, really, right? So last week, if you remember, in sermon we are discussing about this robot example, right? That you can get some motors and wires and circuits and batteries, and right, and you can join all these things, then you have hardware, and then you can program it in some way, right? And then you will have some sort of software. So there is hardware and software in the robot, but then is there such a thing as robot in the robot? Is there someone who is doing anything in the robot? There is no doer, right? Neither there is experiencer, right? Even in the robot, you can install all sorts of sensors, right, which can detect the temperature and touch, and you can also, I mean, there is a image recognition systems as well. You can perhaps install those things, right? I mean, even in the self-driving cars now, they are installing this visual systems, right, which can recognize objects and interact with the physical environment. So you can install such things even in the robot, right? But you know, no one is experiencing all those things, right? And neither whenever robot is moving, that is how we say in a simple language that robot is moving, but you know, there is no one or nothing which is really moving, right? It's just a collection. And even this fact, movement, right? Can you find movement in the physical world itself, or is movement something that can only be there in your mind, really? I'm not saying movement does not happen in the physical world, but the thing is, for example, let's say if I do this, then now what is the only place where you can have this feeling that when I do this, let's say I did this, what is the only place in this world where there is a feeling that before this pen was here and now it is here? What is the only place in universe where that feeling can happen? That is in our mind. And that feeling can happen because we have memory. right? If the memory was not there, imagine that mind process was happening, right? And it had no access to the memory, so it was completely live. Then what would happen is, you just see this, but you would not have any feeling that this pen was here before or here before or here or anything. You, when it's here, then the only feeling you would have is that it's here. When it's here, then the only feeling you would have is that it's here, right? So, as I was saying, that this scolding or inserting, it has many, many different angles. Really, we need to understand all the different angles about how, why this hurts us. And that is why I'm saying that this is a defilement which only goes away when you become arhant. Until then, if someone blames you, accuses you or scolds you, you will feel at least a little bit hurt. It won't go away entirely, right? So, this agent, this feeling that we have, that someone is blaming us, right? That feeling is also responsible for our suffering. So, now, so on and so forth, we can actually analyze many aspects to this, right? So, something... Nowadays, I'm not contemplating about this inserts and scolding in this way. But before, in my earlier practice, I was thinking about this scolding and blaming problem or defilement in this way. So you can also think about this. So Buddha did basically say that when we say something, then that speech, right, the verbal sankharas or the speech, they have five factors. So let me write those five factors on the board.
Metta, Dvesha, true, false, beneficial, hurtful, timely, untimely, and then there was one more factor to the speech. So basically, when Buddha talked about the speech, he did say the speech has five factors basically. So when we are talking with someone, either we can talk with them with the metta or with the dvesha. So with the metta means we speak to them with loving kindness, or we speak to them, right, to hurt them. So that is one aspect of speech. Then what we tell someone, it can either be true or false. Then what we tell someone, it might be beneficial for them or it might be harmful to them, right? So I think better way to say would be harmful, not hurtful. Harmful. And when we say something to someone, then that speech might be timely or untimely, right? You might say something on the correct time or you might say something on the wrong time. So that is also aspect to the speech. And then you might say something in a pleasant way or you might say something in unpleasant way. So how do you speak it? What you want to say, how do you say? So those are the five factors to the speech, right? So there is dichotomy, five dichotomies basically. So now try to think about it. The reason why you feel hurt, really, try to think about it. True or false speech. So now when I read this question, why do we feel hurt when someone scolds or insults us, I will understand this in very specific way. I will think that what you mean to say is that why do we get when we get offended, basically we get angry on other people, right? So that's what I understand from this question. Why do we get angry when someone scolds or insults us? So now try to think about it. Imagine that your parents come to you, right? And let's say you and your parents, you have normal relation, right? So then that is a loving relation. So if your parents come to you and they tell you something, right? Then now, even if what they tell you is wrong,
and you know it is wrong, will you still get angry on them? On your parents? On your own parents? You know that even if your parents tells you something, and even if it is wrong, then now if you have a loving, good relation with them, and you have so much trust between yourself, between the parents and yourself, then you would not, I mean, perhaps you will get little bit irritated or annoyed why they are saying such thing, but you will not really get angry on them, or you will not be offended, or you will not want to hurt them, right, to your own parents. So I want you to think about this. This true and false speech, really, it's not something when people tell us something that is true, or when people they tell us something that is false, that itself does not necessarily hurt us, really. Okay, now think about this. There is someone, and you don't like that person. That someone, whoever they are, let's say you don't like them. Now this person, when they come and they talk with you, because you don't like them, whatever they say, you will get little bit annoyed or irritated, right? And you will get, you know, sometimes even when you don't like someone, even when they say something that is true, even then sometimes you can have this feeling of annoyance or distrust, right? Even when they say something that is true. So, see, this true and false aspect of speech, really, it is not the truth, or when someone says truth or false, it is not that which annoys us, really. It is our trust or distrust, right? I mean, what do we think about this other person in our mind, whether we trust them or not, right? If you think that someone is telling you something wrong, but if you have this frame of reference in your mind that they are saying that wrong thing not to hurt you, but with the loving kindness, right, to help you in some way, then perhaps you will get a little bit annoyed, but you will not get angry, right, in the way you mean in the question. You will not feel in that way. So, see, this truth and true and false speech itself does not necessarily hurt us. So, what really hurts us? So, let's come to that step by step. Then, even this beneficial and harmful. So, even when people tell us something beneficial or harmful, even that necessarily does not hurt us, really. Timely and untimely speech also does not necessarily hurt us. Pleasantly and unpleasantly, when someone speaks with us, even that does not necessarily hurt us. Because if someone is your friend, let's say you are doing something wrong, and they talk with you a bit sternly, then you might think that they are speaking with you in unpleasant way, but you won't get annoyed or frustrated with them, right? Because you know that they are doing so, they are speaking sternly with you in order to help you. So even in that case, you won't get offended or angry, right? It is when this is a very crucial factor, this metta dvesha, as in not how other person, what kind of frame of reference other person has in their mind when they are speaking with you, not that, but what do you think about their frame of reference? As in, when someone is telling you something, do you think they are trying to help you or they are trying to hurt you? As in, are they speaking with the compassion or kindness in their mind when they are talking with you, or are they talking with the aversion? Or because they don't like you. If that is what you feel, then you are definitely going to get offended or annoyed or insulted. Even when they try to do something nice to you, because there is a distrust, right? Then you will have problem with them, right? So it is this factor, this metta and dvesha. So when you say something, then you know for about yourself whether you are speaking with someone with what kind of mind you are having when you are speaking with something. You can know that about yourself whether you are speaking with the metta or you can speaking with dvesha. You can see in yourself. But when others are speaking with you, then you also assume about them, right? So it is this assumption which either what? It either hurts you or nothing. So this is something I was thinking long time ago, right? So nowadays this is not how I'm thinking. I have realized many things about this scolding and insulting in my own practice, as I have tried to practice as a monk, and still I'm not free. I also feel a little bit annoyed because I'm not arhant. Then even when people, they perhaps blame me or accuse me or something, then even then I also feel a little bit annoyed, right? But that is because I know that my practice is not finished. I'm not arhant. If I were to be one, then it would not happen. So again, someone has asked a bit of a technical question. So I don't think I would consider myself competent enough to address this very technical question from my perspective. So I think I will set this aside. You know, we are all listening to the sermon, right? We associate with the Buddha Sasana just for one purpose, and that one purpose is to free ourselves from what? Suffering, right? There is no other purpose why we all get together in here. If we were all happy and if we were all unconditionally happy, we would not gather here. But we are all coming together in here so that we can help each other to get freedom from the suffering, right? So now if we think about the suffering, there are two types of suffering really when we think about the suffering. So I will try to draw your attention to these two types of suffering. So when we talk about the mind process, then we know there are two types of mind processes: basic vipaka process or aggregation process or resultant process, let's say, or vipaka process. And then there is a defilement process, what we call kiles process in Sinhala or Pali. So when we talk about the defilement process, so J and JD, because Chati and Jati Dhamma. So now, so as I was saying, we need to differentiate between two types of suffering. So one suffering is this vexation, this fundamental vexation. So this is one type of suffering, the vexation in the defilement process. So that is one type of suffering, and this is the most fundamental vexation or suffering that we all have. And not just us, anyone who is living in this universe, right? All the beings, the most fundamental vexation that they have is this, the vexation which is result of this ignorance and attachment, right? Now then there is another suffering. So when we talk about this suffering, even of insult and blaming, that is not this suffering. So this ignorance, attachment, vexation, abhisankara, jati and jati dhamma. Now when there is a jati and jati dhamma, as in when there is a feeling of existence of any type, right? Inert existence, or let's say when there is a feeling of inert entities or living entities, whenever that feeling is there, then with that feeling there are 11 great fires. So this results into this jati and jati dhamma. So in these 11 great fires, of course, you have fear and vexation, despair, grief, all these different aspects. So basically the feelings that you don't like, the 11 great fires, that is, we call them 11 great fires. So these 11 great fires are also suffering. So this is secondary suffering, you can say. This is not the most primary suffering. The most primary suffering or vexation that everyone has in this whole universe, not just human beings, is this vexation created by ignorance and attachment. So This is just the secondary suffering. So usually when we are talking about the suffering in our life, we are talking about these 11 great fires. We are not talking about this vexation. But the reason why we have this secondary suffering is because of this primary suffering. And that primary suffering or vexation is because of the attachment. And attachment, of course, is the result of ignorance. And what is the ignorance? The ignorance is what? The feeling that this world is nitya sukha artha. So when there is a feeling that this world is nitya sukha artha, then because of that very feeling, there is an experience of what? Experience of nitya sukha artha. This is a defilement process in a simplified sense, really. Belief in nitya sukha artha is the cause for experience of nitya sukha artha. So try to think about this, right? What does the nitya sukha artha mean? So nitya sukha and artha, it means entity basically. Something, if I were to tell you that something is nitya sukha artha, then what it would mean is that it is entity. And what would entity mean? So now if you were to talk about the entity, see, this is the funny thing, really. We always say entities are not there, entities are not there, entities are not there. We always say that there are no entities in this world. But what does that entity mean, which is not there, really? So, if you were to think about that, then So now, the entity that our minds are looking for, the ignorant mind is looking for, that entity, if I were to, let's just say, give it a visual form, so I'm not saying this is how entity is, I'm just giving you some sort of representation. So if I were to give you some sort of representation of entity, let's say this is the entity, this square, this is the entity. So I don't mean to show you square. Let's just imagine, like when we want to tell you that a mind has horizon, then perhaps we show you that a sine wave, that this is a mind. But you know that is the mind is not actually like that, right? So just like that, imagine, this is, let's say, symbol. I don't want you to think about the square. I just want you to think of this as a symbol for entity, right? So let's say this is an entity, this, right? This is a symbol which represents entity. So what entity means is that it is something which is not connected. So let's say this is the world. Let's say I will draw with the different marker. So let's say this is the word, this red square that I have drawn, let's say that is the symbol for the whole world, right? That is the symbol for whole world, and within the world there is an entity, right? And that entity which is there in the world, I represent it with this black outline, right? The black symbol. So now what are the features of entity? So if this is entity, so let's say this is environment, I will write this is environment, and this is an entity. So this is entity and this is the environment. So what are the features of entity? So one feature of entity is that entity would not interact with its environment. That is a feature of entity. I mean, if someone is an entity, so what does entity mean? So in a one way, entity means something that is independent, something that is separate, is completely unique, right? So such a thing would not interact with its environment, with its surrounding. Only then it would be able to protect its structural integrity, really. Let's put it in that way. In order for this to continuously remain unique and same, it cannot interact with its environment. If it can interact with its environment, then it cannot be unique in any way. So if I were to give you example of what I mean in more specific way, in a more concrete way, right? So imagine that this is an entity, just imagine. And this is something that is completely unique. There is nothing like what is in here in anywhere else in the world. This is the only thing which is like this. So if that is so, now the thing is, imagine that someone comes and they take off this black cap off from this marker and they put on another black cap, the one which looks exactly like this. Then they remove the point, they remove the body of the marker and point and the inside and everything they replace. Then now tell me what remains here from before. If they were to replace all the parts of this marker, then what really remains here? As in, like, from the previous marker? In the same way, you can even think about your body. You know, all the cells in your body, at least scientifically, they say that every few years, I don't know the exact number, they say 7, but I don't know, 7 or however many years, they say that your all the cells in your body are replaced. So then, what remains from earlier you, if I were to ask you that question, if all the cells are replaced from your earlier life, what does remain from before then? See, now, even though all the cells are replaced, but we still think of ourselves as the same person, right? That this body is still the body which was born. This body that we have here is the continuation of something which was there, let's say 20, 30, 40, 50, however many years ago. We feel this is the continuation of that, right? So we think of this body or many things in our life as how? The entity. But the thing is, even though we think of them as entities, you know, I at least haven't found anything so far that does not interact with its environment. Right? Whatever we know from our six senses, the very fact that we know them from the six senses is the proof that they are not entity. Tell me something. You can see all these things here in this room. If all these things, they were to not interact with the light, then would you be able to see all these things? Even though, for example, let's say you see these curtains, the light falls on the curtains and you know the curtains, they have to interact with the light in some way and they have to reflect the light. That is the reason why you can see. So imagine if the curtains were to not do such a thing, they were to not interact with the light in any way at all, then what would happen? Would you see curtains or anything in here? You would not see. But does that mean curtains are not there? I mean, there is no answer to that question. How would you ever know really whether curtains are there or not? If in case the curtains were to not interact with the light at all, right? So the very fact that you can see curtains means they are not entity. Why they are not entity? See, entities, in order for them to remain unique, cannot interact with the environment. If they can interact with the environment, then what it means is that environment can change them, and entities, if I mean
if there is a relation between the environment and entity, as in like open relation, so they can interact with each other in some way. So like when you think about your physical body, when you are breathing, there is inhalation and there is exhalation, right? Both things are there. So when you are inhaling, then basically something from environment is going inside you. And when you are exhaling, then something from the body is going to environment, right? So that is what I mean by interaction between the environment and entity. So you know that is happening, right? Now the thing is, even the... So if we were to think, where did your physical body come from? As in like, how did it originated? Then you know it did originated from... basically biological cells and the environment. It also give energy, and the food was also there, all these things coming together, and also the Gandhava was also there. So Gandhava basically means the mental body, right? Or yeah, but it's not soul. So all those things coming together is responsible for this body. Now if we just think about purely the physical body, you know that all the electrons, protons and neutrons which are here in this physical body, there is nothing special about any of those electrons, protons and neutrons, right? All these electrons, protons, neutrons which are here, they are not special in any way compared to the electrons, protons and neutrons in the exterior environment, right? They are all just same electrons, protons and neutrons. There is nothing special about the particles here or the particles in the environment. It's all same stuff, right? But just because of some causes, right, let's say one of the primary causes, the karmic energy, this body remains organized like this, right? So it's not just karmic energy, the physical causes also have to there, but karmic energy also has to there. So all those factors being together keeps this body in this way. But there is nothing in here which wants to be in this way, right? So if something is entity, it cannot interact with its environment. So, and the thing is, if it does interact with the environment, then now environment can completely change what we consider to be entity. Then what unique thing is really there? That is the question you have to ask yourself. Really, if the environment, if all the electrons, protons and neutrons, let's say in this physical body, if they have originated just from the environment, then what special thing is in here which is not there really? So of course the structure is there, but there is nothing special about structure really. If you were to take some electrons, protons and neutrons from the environment and you were to give them the karmic energy on all the other causes, then they would also organize themselves in a particular way like this physical body. What is really special in here? So that is one aspect of entity. Entities cannot interact with the environment in any way. And interaction, of course, means both ways, right? Taking something from the environment and giving something to environment. So that is something which is not possible for the entity. If something is a real entity, then they would never be able to interact with anything else, not even with the other entities. Now, why did I mention this is because we are talking about this. The very belief in the fact that this world is Nitya Sukha Atta creates the experience that this world is Nitya Sukha Atta. So, the feeling that these entities exist, the entities which cannot interact with the environment. So, see, you might not have thought about the entities in the way that perhaps I have explained here, but if I were to ask you in a simple sense, you, the answer that you would give to me if you were to not understand Dhamma would exactly
define the entities in this way. So for example, if I were to ask you, I mean that question that I asked you earlier, that there is something which has always been here, right? The body that you call your body, you are always you are aging, but no matter how much you age, you always feel your body is always here, right? Since your birth, let's say even since the conception, there is something which has continued. That feeling is there, right? So see, if the entities are real, then first interesting fact about them is that we cannot know about them, even if they are real, using our six senses. Because what can our six senses do? Our six senses can interact with the environment in some way. That is what six senses can do, right? So eyes can interact with the light, and nose and tongue, they can interact with the molecular shape in some way. In the touch, it can interact with the... So pressure, of course, is not... We say rigidity, but the rigidity is always subjective, right? The softness or hardness, it's not objective really, right? It is always subjective. So something that is very hard for you is very soft for Superman. Is that not so? If you give that thing which you feel is very hard to the Superman, then he will perhaps do this, and that thing which you think is very hard and you can't even... compress it little bit, will be broken if you give it to him, right? So you know that this rigidity, hardness or softness is also subjective, right? So sounds, you know, the eardrums, they are sensitive to the vibrations, right? So basically all these senses, they basically interact, and we say they are interacting with something. Isn't that the feeling that we always have? So basically we feel that we have senses, something like this. Imagine that this is your eye, right? Now you have a feeling that I have an eye, let's say this is the eye, and then you have this feeling that there is an object, and where... when the sight happens, you have this feeling that physical eye did see the object, as in something has been seen. That is the feeling which is there always, right? Think about before you did understand anything whatsoever about the Dhamma, when you are living completely normal life, worldly life, right? Completely normal worldly life, not from the perspective of Buddha, but from perspective of Mara, a normal life when you are living, then the feeling that you always have had was what? I have seen something. Nose has smelled something. We don't have this feeling that just the smell has happened. We have this feeling that I am here and some object is there, and I have smelled that object. And that same feeling is there for the when you are seeing something. We see something. I have seen this. That is how we say in the language, right? When we are talking about our experiences. So if you remember, even the last week we are talking about this aspect, right? We feel we have seen something. We have smelled something. It is not that smell has happened because of the causes coming together. There is a feeling that we have smelled something. And the same goes, of course, for all the six experiences. So we are talking about the books, right? If when you are reading books, you feel that there was some knowledge there which you have got now, right? As in you have received some knowledge from the book which is there. That is the feeling that you always have. So it is like what you are doing when you take that as a truth, right? When you consider this normal experiences as true, then basically what you are doing is, imagine that I have 1 plus 2 plus 3. So what's the answer? You would get 6. Now imagine that someone were to say that this 6 comes. So is everyone able to see? If not, I will write little bit on the top. So imagine that when I were to write 1 plus 2 plus 3 equal to 6. Imagine if someone were to say that this 6 comes from the 3. What would you tell them? If when you add 1 and 2 and 3, if someone were to tell you that the 6 comes from the 3 only, then what would you say? Or if someone were to just tell you that the 6 comes just from the 1 and 3 or 2 and 3, that's it, then what would you tell them? You would say they are wrong, right? You would tell them that you are wrong. So, see, you are taking, now, if this sounds a bit abstract, then in last few sermons, we are taking various examples to discuss this very fact, really. So when you think about the color of something, so normally, if you look at this, you think the cap is red, right? The pen has red, this marker has the red color, the pen is red. So what you are doing is that you are attributing an effect to one cause. To what cause you are attributing the effect? So you are basically saying that the reason why you observe red color here is what? The physical matter here. Isn't that what you are saying? Now tell me, if the mind were to not happen, what can you see? If the mind were to not happen, then what can you see? You can't see anything. The mind is the experience of seeing, right? The sight is something that is experienced in the mind, right? Sight is an experience, a mental experience. So, if it is a mental experience, and if the mental experience, or any experience for that matter, is resulting effect of many causes, right? Like this 6 is combination of 1, 2, 3. But you know, 1, 2, 3 are not the only causes which can create 6. You can create 6 in so many ways. You don't necessarily need 1, 2, 3 to have 6, right? You can have 2 plus 2 plus 2, or you can have minus 5 and something else. So all sorts of numbers you can take and you can create 6. So, what we need to understand is that even if the entities are there, then you would not be able to know them really. And somehow, even if you were to know that something is entity, right? So actually, tell me something. When you look at yourself in the mirror, then you always have this feeling that you did exist in the past, right? And you will exist in the future. Imagine we are talking about the normal person. So when you look at yourself in the mirror, then there is a feeling you were there in the past, you are here right now, and you will be there in the future as well. Now tell me, when you observe yourself in any given moment, when is that observation taking place? In the past, present, or in the future? In the present, can observation ever take place in the past? No, right? It's not possible. Whatever you observe, that observation has to be in that moment itself. Okay. So, when you look at yourself in the mirror, you know one thing you can say for sure, given that observation itself that you have in that moment, what you can say for sure is that there are some causes, let's say physical causes, right? We call these biological cells. The aggregation of biological cells, it is there in that moment. That is what we can say for sure. But then how can you say whether there is anything there which was there before as well? You feel in that way because you have a memory, but the thing is, you can plant, if the robot were to, let's say somehow, if you were to able to create a conscious robot, and if you were to plant memory in him, like some of you might know, few years ago, they did, when I was a layperson, then I did really enjoy this TV show. And the name of that TV show was The Westworld. Does anyone know? Anyone has seen it? No? Westworld? No? Okay, no issue. So basically in this TV show, they had some sort of theme park, right? And in this theme park, so you can say that it's a bit of a sci-fi, science fiction TV show. So they are talking about a bit of a future of humanity, and in the future, the technology and everything is so advanced, they are able to create almost human-like robots. You can't distinguish those robots from the human unless you cut them or something. You would not even know. They speak like you, they talk like you, their skin is like you, right? And so now they create a theme park, and in that theme park, they are only this human-like robots. And the thing is, what they do is they program all these robots according to different scripts. As in, like, they plant the memories. How do robots work? According to data, right? So they plant all sorts of data into the different robots according to the role that they have to play in the theme park. So when the humans go and visit that theme park, they just do whatever the heck they like to do. So now people in that show, so the visitors in that show, they show they are doing all sorts of things that no people are doing even in this world, like killing and everything else. So, think about it. Those robots, right? So sometimes what they do is, sometimes people, there are all sorts of missions also in that theme park, right? So you can go on some sort of quest or mission, just like you can do in the games, right? So you can go on the treasure hunting and this kind of things. And if you go on treasure hunting, perhaps there will be fight and these things. And you, now normal humans, they are fighting with the robots. And when they do harm, when they, let's say, break robots or something, now the theme park managers, they have to replace the robots, right? So sometimes they just take the robots which have been harmed or broken, and then they, you know, plant new scripts or something, and then they use those same robots for something else. So see, what is there, we say it's really funny, I don't know how to even ask question, but what is really there, in the robot, really, apart from the aggregation of causes, what is there? Any given moment, we say robot is there, your robot is there, but what is really there apart from aggregation of causes? And in any given moment, the robot only acts according to the all the causes which are there, right? If the software is working but hardware is broken, then it won't be able to function. If the hardware is working but no software is there, then it won't be functioning. If the hardware and software is there, then as long as they are both working together, then it will work. But then there is no agent, right? There is no being there, is there, in the robot? But we can say robot did this, robot did this, and we are doing something to robot, but we are not doing anything to anyone, right? So if this were a robot and you take a sword and you put it in his stomach, you are not doing anything, right, to someone. What is happening? This is bunch of causes. when you do this, as in like put sword in the stomach of robot, then what are they doing, these human beings in the theme park? They are just mixing some causes with another set, aggregation of causes, right? Nothing more is happening really. So why I say all this thing is because observation, it happens in the present moment. How can you infer from the observation which happens in the present moment that this thing was also there in the past, really? How can you know for sure? That is what I'm saying. I'm not saying it did not exist in the past. I'm not saying it did exist in the past. I'm saying how can you be sure? Because whatever you observe in this moment. So you can say that in this moment that thing is here. But how can you say it was for sure it was there in the past? You can, let's say, for example, if we talk about this sermon. Let's say now, not let's say, it is 8:30 right now. So now, how can you know, apart from what you are experiencing right now, that there was sermon before this moment? How can you know for sure? And memories, are memories 100% reliable, really? I mean, can memories not be planted, really? Think about it. Can memories not be planted, really? I mean, even, let's say, even if in the present we don't have technology to do such a thing, is it, if somehow we were able to do such a thing, is it not possible? Or let's say, even if you are at the home, and somehow, let's say, if we are able to, the data that your eye sends from, the data that eye sends to the optic nerve, if we were to send the same data without the eye, how would you know whether you have seen something which is there, or is it just something which you experience because the data is there? You understand what I'm asking? Yeah? Think about it, really. So let's say, right now, you all have this feeling that you are in the library hall. Is it not so? Now imagine, imagine that someone in the morning at your home, when you are sleeping, someone did come to your home and they did cut the connection from the optic nerve and they did connect it with some sort of machine, let's just say, and then they connect this nerve, I forgot the name of that nerve, which connects the ears to the brain. So even that nerve, let's say someone disconnects that, what's the name? Auditory nerve? So auditory nerve. So imagine if they were to cut off this nerves and they were to just send the data, just like the data that is sent by the ears and eyes, they were to send the same type of data to the optic, they were to stimulate them in the same way. Then how would you know, really? You would feel, right? So imagine that they have recorded some sort of data, and now in the morning, even before you wake up, you have not woken up, but they are just sending the data to you, right? So you are feeling that now you are woken up, but you are in the bed, and then continuously they are sending data. So you are still in the bed, but you are feeling you are brushing your teeth, and you have having all sorts of experience. So I imagine that they were to cut all these five nerves, the five experiences, and they were to send data. Then how would you know, really? So do you think, see, this is the thing, all we can know in any given moment is that there are a bunch of causes, they are coming together to create some sort of experience. Whether that experience, this idea of truth or falsehood, we have to understand, this idea of truth or falsehood, we think something is true, we think something is false. We need to understand that this idea of truth and falsehood, right? There is no objective or absolute truth or falsehood. We did discuss this with the example before. So for example, this is a whiteboard, So there is a board here which has a white color. Is that objective or absolute truth? You know, it is a conditional truth, right? Only because of all these conditions in this moment you see this white board. But if you were to we did discuss this, right? If you were to change the lights, instead of white lights you have green lights, then you would see what? The green board, right? And when you see the, let's say the lights here are the green, so you see as a green. But is that green? Is this board now, what do I say, this whiteboard is green? No, this board, this green board, is it green even when the lights are green? Okay, tell me one thing. Right now you think this is a whiteboard. So when you look at this whiteboard right now, are you sure that this is a whiteboard? As in, this is something here is really whiteboard. Are you sure about that? You might feel in that way, and that is how we live our normal life, right? So you know, only reason why you see this as whiteboard even in the presence of this light is because there are no filters on your eyes right now. Isn't that so? If I were to put on some sort of color filters on your eyes, right, let's say red lens or green lens or blue lens or something, then now let's say I give to two of you the green glasses and I don't give the glasses to two of you. So when I ask you what is here, both of you, you say this is a green board and you say this is a white board. So tell me, who is correct and who is incorrect in this situation really? Is there an objective truth here really? See, there is no objective truth here. Now the thing is, what we have to understand is that this Pancha Upadana Skanda, right? Buddha did talk about the Pancha Upadana Skanda in the first noble truth. Buddha did say, Sankitena Pancha Upadana Skanda Dukkha, right? That is what Buddha did say. So this Pancha Upadana Skanda, in a way, so all the Pancha Upadana Skanda, right? Basically you can say, see, if you know that someone is really hungry and they are holding on to something very tightly, then if I tell you one thing about them, you don't know anything about them. So imagine that you see me on the stage like this. Now the only thing you know about, let's say not like this, let's say you see me like this, can you see what is in my hand right now? No, right? So imagine that you see me like this. Now the only thing that you know about me is that I really like this dusters, right? So imagine that someone were to tell you that about me. Now the thing is, you see me, I'm really holding on to something tightly. So can you not infer from that if I like dusters and I am holding on to something very tightly, then it is very highly likely that it would be what? Even though you can't see, it would be highly likely that I would be holding on to what? Duster, right? Because you know I really like dusters. So the Pancha Upadana Skanda, what is the Pancha Upadana Skanda? The Pancha Upadana Skanda basically means something that the ignorant mind holds on to very tightly. So now what is it that ignorant mind likes? Something that is Nitya Sukha Atta, correct? So if it holds on to something tightly, then it must be believing that what it is holding on to must be what? Nitya Sukha Atta. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yes? So, see, this Pancha Upadana Skanda, basically, you can talk about this Pancha Upadana Skanda in many different ways, right? One way you can think about this Pancha Upadana Skanda is, this Pancha Upadana Skanda is just, let's say, bunch of ideas in our own head. Ideas of what type? The ideas of absolute truth, really. So when you think about yourself, don't you think you are an absolute truth? your existence is an absolute truth. Don't you think about that when you think about yourself? As in, I have always been there. See, everyone calls me by my name. So I must be here. So that is the feeling that you have, right? You believe in your existence as absolute truth. Right? You don't believe it is a conditional truth. You think it is an absolute truth. So this Pancha Upadana Skanda is basically collection of such ideas, really. These ideas of something being absolutely true or falsehood. Right? Even when you believe something is definitely wrong, actually this idea of wrong more of comes in comparison to the truth. So when you know that this pen is red, that is truth. If you believe that in your mind, then obviously if someone tells you that it is black, now you are going to have a problem. But why does that problem happen? Because you believe that this is what? Red. Right? And don't you feel when you look at this? See, it is so funny, right? When you look at this, the only thing which is happening to you is your own mind. Isn't that so? Do you see other people's mind when you look at this, or do you just experience your own mind? So if you only experience your own mind when you look at this, then how come you get to say, if I were to say this is a black pen, how can you deny that it is not a black pen for me? If I were to say it's a black pen for everyone, that would be wrong for me. But if I were to say this is black pen to me, then how can you say no? Can you fight with me and tell me no, this is red pen? Can you tell me such a thing? See, the thing is, now you might understand this about the red pen, but there are so many ideas, right? And we don't understand that those ideas are not really absolute truths. Really, the ideas that we believe to be absolutes, we don't understand they are not really absolute. Even about yourself. See, according to the data that people have in their mind, they are going to have feelings about you. Is that not so? What can you do about that? So if someone thinks that you have done something which you have not done, but somehow they feel that you have done such a thing and they accuse you, then perhaps from your perspective and from the data that you have in your own mind, you say that is not true, but they feel it is true, then who is really correct or incorrect in this situation? Tell me. Can we even ask that question? We can't really ask that question. But the thing is, see, when people, they argue with each other and when they engage in this verbal fights, arguments, right, debates, then what they are trying to do is they are trying to basically establish some sort of absolute truths, really, right? So how is that possible, really? If you can find absolute truth of some sort, then you can tell me. See, even the fact that this world is not Nitya Sukha Atta. See, what Buddha did say? Buddha did say that Rupa, Vedna, Sanya, Sankhara and Vinyana, and the sight, sound, smell, taste, touch and thoughts. He said, Disa Anicca Dukkha Anatta. That is what he did say. Right? Now, try to think about this. We did discuss this, if you can recall, we did discuss this example of crazy men last week. The crazy man in love with someone, if you can recall. So this man, when someone asked him, do you at least know where she lives? Then we can go and find her. Then he is like, no, I don't know where she lives. But you at least know her name, right? Then we can go and find her and bring her to you. Then he's like, no, I don't even know her name. But then you at least know who are her parents. Then that man is like, no, I don't even know who are her parents or relatives or anything. I don't know anything about her. But I still love her and you have to go and find her. Then now the other people, they would say you are crazy, right? See, this is the thing. When Buddha talks about the entity, right? He is not saying entities are not there, really. He is not saying entities are not there. Because can you say that the woman that this man loves is not there? Think about the woman that this crazy man loves. Can you say she is not there? Because for you to say she is not there, first you have to understand what it is that he is talking about, right? He is just talking about something, but you know it doesn't mean anything, right? He loves some woman, but he does not know name. He does not know who are the friends, families, relatives, where she lives, what is her age, what is the village. He doesn't know anything, but he is telling everyone, I love her and please bring her to me. So he is saying such a thing. Can you tell, how do you convince him that that woman does not exist? Try to think about it, really, right? This is something you should think about. So, even when it comes to self, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand. It's in a very nominal and conventional sense, we say that self is not there. But if I tell you self is not there, then you first have to ask me a question, what it is which is not there? Okay, right now, you all feel you are here. So how can I tell you are not here when you feel you are here? As in you feel this sense of self that you feel right now, you feel it, right? How can I say you are not feeling that? Are you not feeling it? You are feeling it, right? How can I say you are not feeling? Or how can I say what you have felt, that what you have felt is not there? How can I say such a thing? See, in order to talk about the non-existence, you first have to know the existence, right? And the funny thing is this. The entities, right? If entities are... So if this is all a bit abstract, it's okay. You know, you just take these things in and then maybe process at the leisure, right? But think about these things. The entities, right, if they can't interact with the environment and if they are completely separate from the environment, then the first fact is that you can't know them. Even if somehow you know them, it is impossible, but even if somehow you can find entity and you can know the entities, then the thing is, how can you destroy them? Tell me. How can you destroy the entities? So, see, for example, this is a whiteboard. The reason why you can say, if you were to bring a hammer and you were to start beating this whiteboard with the hammer, then you will say that I have now destroyed the whiteboard. That is what you would say, right? If you were to bring a hammer and you were to hit the hammer hard to this whiteboard and if you were to break it down, then you would tell me what? That now you have broken something which was here, right? See, if there was an entity here, then what entity means is that entities, another interesting fact about the entity is that entities would not have any parts. Entities can't have parts. So, like this, we say this marker has two parts at least, right? So, like that, if there are real entities, those entities cannot have parts, really. That is something you should understand about the entities. Now, how can you break something which has no parts, really? Tell me. How can you break something which has no parts? And you know, see, this is the thing. We were discussing this idea that when we are living our normal day-to-day life, unless we have associated with the Buddha or the disciples of Buddha, we are always living our life in very biased way, really. So, biased, in what way we are biased? So, we are biased by this belief, really. We fundamentally believe in Nitya Sukha Atta, and we are biased by this feeling. So, because we are biased, when we look at this marker in this moment, we feel that this marker was there before as well. The reason why we feel that, and the thing is, you know, if you are Arhan, let's say, and you are present in this sermon from the beginning to end, right, and I show this to you multiple times in the sermon, then if that memory is there, then when I show this to you, even to you as Arhan, even you would have this feeling that of course this pain was there before. But he understands what that experience means, really. He does not take that experience to be an absolute truth, really. He just understands that this is a conditioned experience. As in, like, when you look at this, the feeling is there that this marker was there before. He would understand there are reasons or causes why this type of experience or feeling happens. Right? When the sanya happens and there is a feeling that this whiteboard marker, this red marker was there before as well, he understands that the reason for that is because there is a memory. And even when the memory is there, the function of memory, see, the when we talk about the sanya, right, what is sanya? What is the sun? Sun is a collection or aggregation, right? Sanya, not aggregation, right? The very function of sanya, I mean, see, there is a, the way we use language, you know, it can completely give you completely wrong idea about what is really happening if you take the language literally. When we say recognize, we feel what? That there is something which was there before and now we have just recognized, right? So when we translate the sanya into English, we say sanya means recognition, right? Receiving, registering and recognition. So we say recognition, and the feeling that we have with the recognition is recognition, right? As in, before also you have experienced this, but now you are experiencing it again, right? That is the feeling that we have with the recognition, right? But you know that it is not necessarily true, really. That is what you have to understand, right? So basically, you have many beliefs about this absolute existence and absolute truths or entities. You have many feelings like that in your life, right? Your mind is full of such beliefs. Now, what you have to do in your practice is, first you have to understand anicca, dukkha, anatta, and then you have to analyze your life from the perspective of anicca, dukkha, anatta, right? So, like, we did take some examples. So, we did take this example of whiteboard, and we did take example of what you see, right? I mean, we did try to think about this manipulation of the all the nerves, right? So, all this hypothesis, right? You can do all these thought experiments, and you can contemplate whether all these things that you believe to be absolutely true, you can think whether those things are absolutely true or not. You can just ask yourself that question. And now, when you ask yourself that question, then what you will find is that these are all conditional and subjective truths. These are not absolute truths, really. Right? So, So you can think about many things in this way. Really, you can even think about your own name. Think about your own name. Do people call you whatever your name is, Mr. or Mrs. or Miss so and so? Do they call you by that name because you are, that is really your name, or because both you and them, they just think it is your name? Think about it. Your name, right? Whatever your name is, let's say your name is Mr. John. So when people call you, "Hello, Mr. John," then now you might either agree or disagree, right? You would either agree that yes, hello, you would respond positively that yes, I mean, when that experience happens, then according to memory, it says yes, approve, okay. So that is the correct name. So then you would say yes. If not, then you would say no, my name is not Mr. John. But dependent on what? On the memory. And what is special about memory? Because your parents told you John, 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 then now you think you are John. But if they had said, let's say, I don't know, Jalaluddin, if they had said Jalaluddin, 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 then you would recognize yourself as Jalaluddin. Then are you John or Jalaluddin? Who are you? Try to think about it. Right? So this memory, right, your name is something that is created, it is conditioned, right? It is not unconditioned. I mean, you might think it's funny that I talk about these things, but this is something you should think about clearly. Are your name something with which you came, or is it something that was just given to you? Is there anything special about your name, really? If you were given name Jalaluddin, then your whole life people would have addressed you as Jalaluddin, and every time they say Jalaluddin, you think, I am really Jalaluddin, that is why they address me as Jalaluddin, and you would just feel happy, right? And then Jalaluddin would be something special to you, right? If not Jalaluddin, if they have given you name Johnny, then now the Johnny is special to you, right? But is there anything special about any of these names? Even your own name, you feel it is your name. But so see, all these things we have to understand, right? This pleasure, see, now if I were to imagine that I were to know all of your names, and when I am talking with all of you, or let's say when I'm doing this sermon, I address all of you with your real names, right? And now you might feel a little bit of pleasure, perhaps, right? And that pleasure is there because of Pancha Upadana Skanda, right? Even the question that someone, whoever had asked this question earlier, why do we feel why do we feel offended when someone insults us or something, right? That is also connected with this. Because we believe in some sort of idea about how we are, right? And when we believe in some sort of idea, this is how we are, and we believe it to be absolutely true, that is why we get offended, really. So imagine that now you are all healthy, right? So now you all have your limbs as like normal human beings, right? You are walking and doing everything normally. Now imagine that accident were to happen, right? And now you were to lose one of your limbs. Now people, let's say some people, they might make fun of you, imagine. They might call you, I don't know, I honestly don't know any insulting word. I don't know what they would call you, but let's say you lose your limb and they address you with some sort of derogatory terms. You, let's say you only have one hand now, because when you are working you lost one hand, so now you only have three limbs, two legs and one hand. So when some people, when they look at you, they make fun of you. So now the reason, now you will get offended, right? If they were to do that, will you not get really hurt? Why do you get hurt? I'm not saying whether you should get hurt or not. I am just asking you to think about why would you get hurt. when such a thing were to happen. See, because you hold on to this idea, you hold on to, basically, let's say, I will show it. You hold on to some idea So, you hold on to some ideas in that case, right? So, let's say this is you. So, now you hold on to some ideas, right? One idea is what? That I have three limbs. This is idea one that you hold on to on your mind, right? Into your mind. You keep this idea in your mind, right? When something like this happens, then from that moment onwards, what do you feel about yourself? I have three limbs. This is idea one. Now, even before you get this idea, when you have lived your life with all the other human beings in this world, then since your birth, you have another idea in your mind. What is that idea?
That idea I will write as idea 2. What is that idea?
Actually, I should have given it idea 1, or let's say idea, I give this name idea 0, because this is more fundamental idea. So, you hold on to this idea that normal
human equals to what?
Four limbs.
So, normal human being or ideal human being or perfect human being means what? He has two hands and two legs, so four limbs, right? So, that is what? The ideal or perfect standard, right? So, when you have that idea and when this happens, then when you have this feeling, now what is the result of these two ideas being together in your mind? Happiness or depression? Yeah, you feel abnormal, you feel imperfect, right? You feel perhaps imperfect and you feel a little bit depressed and your self-esteem goes down and your confidence goes down, right? Because you feel somehow you are different from other people in bad way, right? Not in good way, in a bad way. That is how you would feel, right? Even when no one tells you anything, let's say when this happens and you go back to your office and no one makes fun of you. But you look at everyone and this is what you see. So then what would you feel? When you have this idea in your mind that something is wrong with me, right? So you're already feeling bad. And the thing is, when someone tells that to you in derogatory terms, right? They make fun of you. Now things only get worse, right? Now the problem is this. It is not wrong. When you have three limbs, you should not think that no, I am perfect and I have four limbs. That is not what you should do with the Dhamma. If such a thing were to happen with you, what you should do is you only need to understand one thing. What is that one thing? You need to understand that I have three limbs, yes, in this moment. It is not always true. It will not be always true in the future as well. That is what you need to understand, really. When something like this happens, then people, they feel something irreversible has happened. But the thing is, this is not something irreversible, right? I mean, even if you were to even if you were to not live in modern times, even if you were to live in ancient times when we did not have any biotechnology or engineering or anything, even in that time, right? See, this three limbs, right? The only thing it means is that this is how the causes are in this moment. And is there something in here which says that now it will no longer accept the fourth hand, really? The second hand, really. So, I think I'm not able to communicate the idea clearly. What I mean to say is that the fundamental problem is not that you have three limbs and everyone else has four limbs, as in two hands and two legs, and you only have one hand. That is not problem in this situation. The reason for your depression, right? The reason why you feel abnormal is because you hold, let's say, even if you have to forget about this idea, you have to understand the reason for your suffering is because you believe in this idea so strongly. You believe that this standard is the objective standard. This is really absolutely true. This is absolute truth. That is what you believe. See, this is why. Imagine that if you were to, they say that the Homo sapiens that we have right now, right, as in what we have, what we call human beings right now, we call them Homo sapiens, right? They say that perhaps many thousands and thousands of years ago, there were some other species as well who were similar to us. But now they are extinct. The only, we are the only, let's say, I can't recall those names, Nathandrials and some other species, I'm not sure, I don't know how to classify them. So basically they say that there were other, now today when we use the word human being, we mean Homo sapiens, but before thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, right, they were, let's say people like us, right? But they had different type of body and characteristics and these things. But now they are extinct, right? So only species which remains is the Homo sapiens. And we say normally this Homo sapiens, we say that they are supposed to have two hands and two legs, right? But the thing is, imagine that if we were to go extinct, right? And see, the problem is, I'm jumping at many places, but the problem is this. When we have data, right, whenever we have some sort of data, so what is our mind? Basically, in a way, you can think about the mind as just the collection of data, aggregation of data, right? From the six senses constantly, the data comes through and the data is processed and some sort of experiences, they keep happening, right? So in a way, you can think about mind as just a information or data processing. So in that case, what happens, what goes wrong, and the exact reason why we have suffering is because when we have all this data in our mind, from that data, we create some sort of idea about the absolute truths, really, right? So imagine that this is a human being, and okay, I will show you something on the whiteboard. So you see one human being, he is like this. You see another human being, he is like this. You see another human being and he is like this, and so on and so forth. You see many human beings, and then, so basically when I say you see many human beings, what I mean is that when the sight happens, when the experience of sight happens in your mind, some sort of data is basically added to the memory, right? So as the data is added, according to that data, some sort of idea has been now created in the mind, right? So that idea, we need to understand whether the idea in our mind or the idea in anyone's mind, right? Idea are always something that ideas are something which are created in our mind, really. It is not like, do you think that you can just look at this marker and you can recognize it as a black marker, as in like call it a black marker just by looking at it? Do you think that is normal or something that is supposed to happen? Do you think? When you look at this, do you think that it is normal to call it black marker, as in it is something that should happen to everyone? I mean, perhaps you feel that that is how it should be, but you know, if that is how it should be, if there is something in here which triggers that recognition of this as a black marker, then why do we have to teach our children all these things? We don't have to teach them, right, that this is a black marker, and when you look at this, you have to call it black marker. Why do we have to teach them that? So see, these ideas are something that we have given to our children, right? And we have also received it from our parents. So when you look at many human beings, right, and they all have two hands and two legs, then now you create an idea in your mind that human beings means two hands and two legs. But something that you should understand is that this is just the idea that is created based on the data. Right? So see, just because you have 8 billion human beings and most of them having two hands and two legs, it does not mean that having two hands and two legs is normal, really. It is, statistically, it is normal given that data, right? Given that data, it is normal. Now imagine something like this. This is just a thought experiment, right? Imagine that there are two species of human beings. One lives above the ground and one lives below the ground, and both of these species, they have never interacted with each other, so they have no idea about each other, right? Imagine now the species which lives above the ground, they are like this, two hands and two legs, and the species which lives below the ground, let's say they have 3 hands and 5 legs or 4 legs, let's say, right, to even out things. So 4 hands and 4 legs, let's put in that way. So they look something like this. I don't know. So this is not dog, okay? I don't know. They look something like this, perhaps.
Like the Indian gods.
Huh?
Like the Indian gods.
So, yeah, perhaps deities or something. So imagine that they all have 4 hands and 4 legs, right? So now they also have scientists like us, right? The biologist and statistician and all this mathematician and all these people, they also have people in there, right? With the same knowledge as us. Now the thing is, when they look at their world, then what do they see? Everyone, most of them, they also have biological problems. So not everyone, but they see that among their population, most of them, they have 4 hands and 4 legs. So what would they think is a normal? They would think 4 hands and 4 legs are normal, and they also call themselves human being. Imagine. Now, who is correct and who is wrong? Tell me. See, this problem, this conflict, right? They happen because we believe in absolute truths, really. So, and the thing is this. all the things that you say, no matter what you say, right, it is always something that is conditioned. Tell me the reason why I can tell you all these things right now. Is it not because I have thought about these things? And I have also been taught these things from someone. And they have been taught from someone. Tell me, what is it that we know regardless of causes and conditions? What knowledge can we have that is not conditioned? Think about it. Our knowledge is conditioned by our six sensory experiences, right? Apart from six sensory experiences, what knowledge can you have? And the knowledge that you have dependent on the six sensory experiences, that knowledge is just subjective, right? It is not objective. It is not absolute, right? Like we did demonstrate, we don't give you the glasses, but we give glasses to, let's say, people on this side. Then they all think that this whiteboard is green because I have given them green glasses. So their experience is that it tells them that this is a green board. And both of you think this is a whiteboard. So, whose experience is correct or wrong? There is no answer. Who is correct or wrong? There is no answer. But the thing is, if people on this side and if people on this side, if people on both sides, if they both believe in existence of absolute whiteboard, now there will be a problem. Right? I mean, we call it, let's say, whiteboard, but let's say if both sides, they believe in absolute board, right, the board, then now there will be problem. If you meet each other, then now you will tell them that it is a green board and you will tell them, no, it is whiteboard, and perhaps even fight with each other over this idea. And these things, they happen in the world, right? Don't you think? People, if you think this is not something that happens in the world, people, they are always fighting because of ideas, really. Right? And those ideas, people, they fight for ideas because they somehow feel that the ideas that they believe in, they think that they are absolute in some way. They are absolutely true in some way. Right? Now the problem is this. What actually happens in our mind is that the feeling when we believe into something, right, whatever beliefs you have, when you believe into something, if your mind is ignorant, then the thing is, when you believe into something, then you have this feeling that what you believe in is absolutely true. You get that feeling. But what you have to understand is that this feeling is conditioned. That is what you have to understand, really. Even though, see, this is the funny thing. The feeling of absolute itself is not really absolute. This feeling of absolute, right? So, when both of you look at this board and without any glasses, normal condition, if you have the experience of whiteboard, you both tell yourself that it is a whiteboard and you agree with each other and you become friends, let's say. And then that feeling happens that this is a whiteboard. Now the problem is, if you don't understand anicca, dukkha and anatta, if you have not thought about your experience that the eye is anicca, brain is anicca, optic nerve is anicca, dukkha and anatta, right, the mind itself is also anicca, dukkha, anatta. If you have not contemplated that fact and you have ignorance, then now when that experience happens, then what you feel is that this feeling that you have that this is a whiteboard, you feel that it is absolutely true. Right? That is the only problem we have, really. Every time when the experience happens, if you can, you will always feel, I mean, if you are ignorant and if you have not practiced enough, you will always feel whatever you believe is absolutely true. That is what you will always feel. But the only thing that you have to do is you have to understand that what you believe to be absolutely true happens because of two reasons. right? Whatever you believe happens because of causes and conditions. And when you believe whatever you believe to be absolutely true, that feeling of this is absolutely true happens because of ignorance. That is what you need to understand. So if the ignorance was not there, you would not believe it to be absolutely true. So like imagine that before we ever thought about this whiteboard and we did analyze about this process of seeing, right? If you had never thought about all these things, the lighting and optic nerve and eye and glasses, if you had not done this thought experiment, then what would you have believed as a normal person, that this is really a whiteboard, right? Like it is not, you would not say that it is just I who feels that this is a whiteboard. You would say, or you would feel to yourself and you would tell yourself, this is really whiteboard. That is why I feel it is whiteboard. Right? Because the reality is in this way. That is why I feel it to be in this way. That is what you would feel, right? Actually, this is the trick of Mara, really. Right? This is the Mara fooling you, really. The Mara which exists in your mind, the ignorance. It is this Mara who is fooling you. Even though the experience has happened in the mind, right? You project that experience onto the reality, and not only that, you say that you are experiencing what you are experiencing because the reality is in that way. Right? Even before you did observe something, you feel the reality was in that way even before you did observe it. It is just that now when you observe it, you just happen to know about it. That is how you always feel about this world. See, this is the problem really. And that problem, let's say, I would not say a problem, but this is also effect. This feeling of absolute truth. We don't need to fight it. We need to understand that that feeling happens because of this ignorance really. So that is all we need to do, right? Whenever you believe into something absolute, you just need to do what? Cause and effect analysis. You need to think about the causes and conditions which are responsible for that effect, whatever it is that you believe. So for example, if you believe that you are a young person or you are old person or whatever you believe, you can think about it. Is that really absolutely true? That you are young or you are old. Is that absolutely true? How can you say whether you are young or old? Tell me. Think about it. How can you tell me that you are young or old? So that is just the convention. I mean, when people they don't have hair, or when they have a gray hair, or when they have white hair, right? Or when they go bald or something, normally, right, with the aging, then we say people have aged, or when their skin gets wrinkled, right, then we say they have aged. But these are just ideas. Imagine that someone is just 20 years old, but because of some sort of disease, they age very fast. And when they are 20 years old, technically, according to worldly standards, they look like they are 60. So are they 60 or are they 20? See, these are things which will go make you go crazy if you think about them. So you don't need to think about them. You just need to understand these are all what? Just conventional ideas generated in our minds according to causes and conditions, really. Right? So So that is fundamental thing that you have to do in your own practice of Dhamma, right? Whatever you think, you experience or you believe, you have to contemplate that this is not really so. It is not always so. So, okay, if you eat salt, you eat salt. What should be the taste of salt? Salty? Sure? Always salty? sodium chloride, is it always supposed to taste salty? Sure? Can't say, really. Just because so far you have tasted salt and you have always experienced salty taste, does not mean that next time when you eat salt, it will taste salty. So I'm just giving you examples, right? Whenever you see something, you smell something, taste something, touch something, hear something, or think something, you have to understand it is not really so, but it seems like this is how things are. And it seems this is how things will be as well. And you have to understand that experience that happened because of ignorance, really. If you understand, for example, that the only reason why you see this board as white in any given moment is not because this board is inherently white, but because of only the causes in any given moment, and we cannot say what color this white board is really. If you understand that, then you have to think about everything in your life in the same way, really. The salt is not supposed to taste salty always, really. So, what do you look like every time when you go and see yourself in the mirror? Then, don't you feel that yes, it is correct? You have that feeling, right? So when you go in front of mirror, so you see certain image, and when you see image, then now you feel that image is correct. That is how it should be, right? Because that is how it is supposed to be. That is how you are supposed to be, right? So as long as that image is consistent with your expectation, you feel it is correct, right? That is why one day, if something happens to your face perhaps, and that day when you go and look at yourself in the mirror, now that day you will have what? Suffering perhaps. Let's say you get some sort of pimple. A big pimple or something. I don't know whether we can get one on the forehead or not, but just imagine. One day you go in front of mirror and there is a big pimple on your forehead. It looks really ugly. Now you will suffer because you think that there is something which is supposed to be in some way. You don't understand, you have not observed yourself, ladies and gentlemen. The only thing which has happened in the mirror is the sight has happened. And see, this is the funny thing, right? So now we don't have time, but this mirror example, it's a very profound example. There are so many things to think about it in the mirror, right? Even what you see, so imagine if this was mirror and someone comes in front of that mirror and they look in the mirror, they would see something. Do you think that what they see is there, or are they just experiencing their own mind? Do you think that what you see in the mirror is out there in the world? This is how you think, right? When you think about the seeing something, that is how you feel, right? It is there and you see it. That is how you feel, right? Even in the mirror, you think image is there and now you have seen the image. That is how you feel, right? Is that so? Is image there and you have seen it? Or just the mind has happened? If the mind had not happened, then what would you have seen? Now the thing is, you think, see, this is something that we, so now we are going to conclude, right? We don't have time, but just last thing, right? So last week we were discussing, right? You want to go traveling many places because you think that there are experiences which are waiting for you. Right? The places that you have not seen, they are there waiting for you. As in waiting, as in like the So imagine that, let's say maybe you have not seen a pyramid, and now you want to go and perhaps travel and see the pyramids in the Egypt, let's say. So you think you have not seen. So you have this feeling that right now, even though you have not seen pyramids, the pyramids are there and they look same to everyone, right? Whoever goes and sees pyramid, they all see the same pyramid. I'm not talking about the physical matter. I'm talking about the colors. Because colors are not there in the physical reality, right? Colors are in the mind. Colors is the experience. Colors are not physical. If the colors were physical, then even when I give the green glass to all the people on this side, they would still be able to see the correct color. Color is something that is just the effect in the mind, right? So see, the thing is, the reason why if you have not seen something and you suffer is because you don't understand colors are only something that happens in your mind, and they are also like the combination of 1, 2, 3. So colors, they don't come from 1. Colors, they don't come from 2. Colors, they don't come from 3. Colors are just combination of 1, 2, 3. Like the 6 is combination of 1, 2, 3 effect. Colors are also just combination of the causes, really. So when you understand this, then you will understand that there is nothing waiting for you anywhere in this world. Nothing whatsoever. There is nothing which you need to know when you understand this. There is nothing that you would like to see, because you know you can't see. Colors can happen, but colors does not mean you have seen something. Colors only mean colors. Sound only means sound. Sound does not mean you have heard something. When you play some file in your phone and you tap on the play button, you perhaps feel that now you are hearing something which is there in your phone. You get that feeling, that is why you suffer. Because it's not correct, really. So you feel like this about all the 6 experiences. That is why your life is full of suffering, really. So we have to practice, and we have to get a full realization of this, right? And the thing is, the ignorance is also subjective. It's not objective. So it's like we all don't know how to do addition. But the thing is, we all have different problems. I mean, you have to do 1 plus 1 and you have to do 2 plus 3 and you have to solve some other problem. You all have to solve some problem. I have to solve some addition problem. You all have to solve addition problem, but the specific problem that we have are all different, right? That is what I mean to say. Our lives are different. So what we think to be absolutely true and what we believe to be Nitya Sukha Atta is all different. But the fundamental problem is same. We all think Nitya Sukha Atta, right? That is the fundamental problem. So with that, let's conclude today's sermon, right? Let's transfer the merits. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirit, listening to the Dhamma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in the receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings. With immense gratitude, let us transfer this merits to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasaka, upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the noble generations. Son, through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us to study, understand, and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also take a moment to transfer the merits to all those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of Buddha, be that by transliterating the sermon, sharing them out with others, or inviting them to join us. May through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May through the power of these merits, they abstain themselves from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer all the merits we have acquired to our devotees, friends of the monastery, and our mothers and fathers and husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, and all those who have helped us, assisted us and supported us in this infinitely long journey of samsara. May by power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacle to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the Devas and Brahma, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakkadeva, as well as the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer merits to guardian deities who keep watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May through the power of these merits they prosper in the divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who have been our families and friends and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey of samsara, who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in every way they could. Let us transfer the merits. Let us also transfer the merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who have lost their lives in the war, be they friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also transfer merits to all those who have lost their lives in the natural calamities such as the tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this infinitely long journey of samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits to them. May through the power of this merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, let us resolve that may through the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired today throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arhats on this blessed land. And finally, may the through the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I and everyone who has helped make this program a success become Arhantu Vahanse and Arhanta Vahani Vahanse in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Theron Sarnay.